You are Locked On
NBA,
your daily
NBA
podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, everybody, to your favorite day of the week. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Adam Matis. Adam, this is podcast number 2 of 3 for the two of us tonight, recording together. And so far, we haven't yelled or screamed or cussed at each other. So I got to give you a virtual high five.
Look at us. Who thought we would be here, huh? Not me.
Not me.
No, of course, you cover the Lakers, I cover the Nuggets, and here we are with our Locked On NBA show, just in prime position on the night before the Western Conference Finals begin. If anybody knows these teams, it's us. I'm excited for it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there are some other people that people would love to hear from on the Lakers than me, but you know what? You're stuck with me. This is what you get. We have a lot to get to. Like you talked about, the Lakers and Nuggets are getting ready for their series. The Heat take a 2-0 lead, coming back once again and beating the Boston Celtics 117-114. And then, as we do every single week, we have the latest iteration of our power rankings, this time talking about the entities who have the most to gain based on how the conference finals and eventually the finals play out.
What I love about that final segment is I hate power rankings and I hate the idea of people having more or less to gain. So this is a perfect marriage for a dumb segment to send us into the weekend.
You can tell who came up with that idea.
Right as I took a big drink, Anthony. Wow.
All right, let's start with the Heat taking down the Celtics 117-114. Jimmy Butler made some monstrous plays defensively to help put away Boston. The Heat in general, it's this weirdest thing, and we talked about this a little bit in the first segment in terms of leadership from the best player and all of these things, but it's wild how much better Miami seems to get over the course of the game. And it's the same story over the course of the game. In this case, it's even more specific because Boston can't seem to score against the zone.
Well, that's what I would say, is that tonight the Miami Heat were in the zone defense, especially in that second half. And look, a lot of the takes, this is the nature of sports. A lot of your takes just come down to who won or lost, right? This was 106-101. This was a good game. This was a very hotly contested game. The Celtics drop it, and now they go to 0-2. Two very close games that they now drop and are now 0-2, and it feels like everything the Celtics is doing is not working. Everything Miami's doing is working, and it certainly felt like that at parts tonight. I mean, that second quarter, Miami outscored Boston 37-17, but to me the story is you've got a great coach in Brad Stevens. You have a great coach and a smart team in the Boston Celtics. You have a great coach and a smart team in the Miami Heat. And what I think the story of the series is so far is that Miami has kind of found a way to dumb this game down. And what I mean by that is with that zone, you know, Boston wants to hunt some mismatches and find some, you know, work their offense to get the exact shots that they want. Miami's kind of forcing them on what shots they get. And it's not necessarily even that they're bad shots. It's just not rhythm. It's not the offense that they want. They're so disrupted from that zone. And when we say zone, I think a lot of people here, especially when we talk college, to me, the college zone is, this is the easiest thing to teach a group of teenage boys in like a short order that they can go out and execute because it's simple and it's gimmicky. The zone Miami is throwing out there is not gimmicky. This is this is like the new wave. They are on a string. Those guys are aggressive, yet still like working together and rotating and watching it. It's like a machine. It's impressive. So they're just so connected right now in that zone, and they're controlling the tempo.
There's even an intricacy to like a little tweak that they have thrown. And this was something that, like you mentioned, the kind of shots that Boston is getting against it. And I think one of the things that I would maybe tweak what you said there, and it's the shots that Miami wants them to take in terms of the timing of a play. Because like if you're shooting a three-pointer that isn't from the corner, the ball's going to be in the air for quite a little while. And what that allows those guys up top, because they're playing their smaller players down low and they're playing their bigger wings up high, which clogs up passing lanes and does all these different things. And if the shot is coming from a far distance away, that allows those guys to come down and gang rebound. And it's just, I found myself marveling at the way that that's put together. And, you know, NBA coaches don't tend to get much credit for X's and O's aspects of it, right? It's a lot more ego managing. It's a lot more, you know, being a CEO than it is really, your typical like Hoosiers type coach, right? And I think in this case, this is a brilliant basketball mind coming up with a very unique way of defending that another, like somebody who was one of the better college coaches in recent memory is now having trouble scoring against. It's really interesting to watch.
Yeah, it is. And I think it's might be a little bit of a new evolution or evolution. Yeah. Evolution of the NBA. The zone has such a stigma to it. It's like an okay. Most teams would just go to it when they couldn't get stops or they just didn't have trust in their players.
Here's this other thing we're going to try.
With Toronto and Miami and some other teams have really tried it throughout the year, but to really deploy it in this way, I think is, I don't want to say revolutionary, but I do think it's something that we might, this isn't the last we'll see of it. It's a new wave of things coming on. Points in the paint tonight. Boston outscores Miami 46 to 44. Only six of those 46 came in the fourth and only 14 in the second half, which means Boston was living in the paint in the first half. Second half, they go there and it just completely cuts it off. Even though this is a three-point shooting league, even though Boston got a decent amount of good of looks, they were able to like work the ball around. You got to have that balance of putting pressure inside and outside. And
yep.
What happened with that zone was there just wasn't any pressure inside.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Can I offer up a bit of a hot take?
Anthony, it's the only take you know. I've never heard a medium take. I've never heard a cold take. I've only heard a hot take.
All right. Well, everybody seems to hate that kind of lower angle on, okay. Yeah. On, you know,
the baseline, the sideline. Yeah.
The sideline, the lower angle. Here's where I think it offers up some value because you watch a zone and you think to yourself from a high angle, you're saying, why aren't you just putting some, I myself found myself thinking this, the way that you break a zone is you send somebody to the free throw line, you get the ball in the middle, they rotate the ball opposite side and you get an open corner three on the other side. But the value in that lower angle there is the reason people hate it is because it's so jumbled up. You can't really see through anything. And you look at the angles that they're going to be trying to get that pass into the free throw line with, given the way Miami is deploying their wings up top, right. It becomes impossible to do it. I think
Kemba Walker angle, is this what you're telling me? This is what Kemba Walker sees when he's going against all that length and size?
Dude, it'd be terrifying. So much like athleticism and length and instincts.
I do hate that angle because, like you said, I can't see anything, and I'd rather have the God's eye view than the player's eye view. But nonetheless, one thing I do wonder, though, about the series, these two are two really good teams, and like I said, the margin's small. It's 2-0, so that margin is huge. But the margin for each game is really, really tiny. And given that Boston has struggled with the zone to this point, I am curious if there's an adjustment to be made that breaks this game open a little bit. Because Boston actually had a pretty sizable lead going into the half.
Both games.
They were very, very, very comfortable. So if they do solve that, I think the series can swing. Denver has come back from 3-1 twice. Oklahoma City came back from down 0-2, getting demolished in the first two, to then pushing that to seven games and almost winning. I really do think the bubble allows for this for a lot of different reasons, the changes of momentum. So being down 0-2 in a regular series versus being down 0-2 in the bubble, I don't think this series is over. It would feel a lot more over if Boston was 0-2 at home and now going to Miami would feel like it's over. To me, it doesn't feel over. It's really close, and if you could figure something out, it tilts the series right back.
Yep. Let's take a quick second here. When we come back, we are going to try to quickly break down or try to preview this upcoming Lakers and Nuggets series. Again, we're going to try to do so quickly. I don't know if we're going to succeed in doing so. If I would have told you heading into this season that you and I were going to do these national shows together now for, what is it? This is the second or third season that we've been doing this together, that we would be previewing a Western Conference final series between the Nuggets and the Lakers. What would you have bet on that? Like, what kind of odds would you have
required? There's no way the Lakers make it. Are you kidding me? No way. Are you serious? The Los Angeles Lakers? Wow.
Yeah, we definitely would have thought it was the other team from the Clippers or from the other team from the Z, right? Yeah. All right, let's try to go about this from this standpoint. the playoffs are all about trying to take away the thing that the other team does the best and then forcing a team to have to do the thing that they do the worst the most often. My question is, between the two teams and given what they both try to do the most, which team do you feel more confident is capable of forcing the other team away from the thing that they do the best and into doing some of the stuff that they do the worst?
Well, I think it's clearly the Lakers, because the Lakers have some strengths in Denver's weaknesses. So if you look at Denver, to me, the number one thing that they don't do, that they don't do well, the number one weakness, as Donovan Mitchell pointed out, was make them guard in space and spread pick and roll. Well, you got Anthony Davis, you got JaVale McGee, you've got Dwight Howard. These guys all can roll to the rim, so you got multiple guys you can do that. And by the way, you have LeBron James, who's very good. He's ran a pick and roll or two in his day. So they have the pieces to kind of do to Denver what is, you know, kind of puts them on their heels. The other way around, I mean, what would you say from your perspective is the thing that if a team had the pieces could really exploit about the Lakers?
Well, for one thing, if you just commit to not allowing AD and LeBron to beat you and force guys
that's so broad though. I mean, yes, if you can stop LeBron.
But the reason the Lakers lost game one against the Blazers, because the Lakers were very clearly a much better team there, right? The reason that they lost that game and it was still close was because they shot 16% from 3-point range.
So that would be the thing, I think, for Denver is can they outgun them from behind the three-point line? And Denver is a streaky three-point shooting team too. I mean, they can run really hot there. And they, if you play Michael Porter Jr. a lot, you might even expect to run hot from there. But there's always the trade-offs with Denver's lineups, and they're not such a good shooting team like a Houston. That didn't work out either. But they're not such a great shooting team that you can expect them to beat them four times handily enough to make up for all the other areas. So I would agree with you, actually. If I look at the Lakers and I look at the Nuggets and I say, it's really hard for me to picture the avenue for Denver to kind of succeed there. I mean, it's possible, especially if, say, Anthony Davis just has a terrible series. I think that's like the most likely. It's not likely, but it's the most likely thing that could happen most that kind of levels the thing. That, and then, yeah, just count on – put the Lakers in position where they're counting on Danny Green, Alex Caruso, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, again, Markieff Morris. You're counting on those guys to hit 3-4 three-pointers a game. Those guys can all hit a couple. They can all get hot and string them together in a row. But if you're forcing those guys, saying, hey, Caruso, you're getting 10 shots tonight. KCP, you're getting 7-8 open looks tonight. They might hit them. They might not.
Well, and the tough thing there, too, is to stay committed to it even as they're hitting.
Sure.
Because the ways that those other series broke open was those teams stopped staying committed to it, and then LeBron and AD really took over. My question, I think, number one question, other than can the Celtics score against the zone, I think the question, the thing that I find the most interesting here is this is a very different team in Denver than entered the bubble. And I want to know what changed. Tangibly, what is so different about this team that would be so capable of, or is it even that different? Is it just things that we overlooked previously that they did really well that we didn't really notice as much? What is it about this Nuggets team that was able to flip the switch and come back from 3-1 twice?
I do think it's funny that people were like, my goodness, look at Jokic. As if you gave one of the 10 best players in the NBA, Ivica Zubac, to defend him and were surprised that he had his way with him.
It was funny to see Clippers like fight back on that. Like, you guys, come on.
Oh, I loved it too. They're like, yeah, in his 14 minutes, they were a +3. It's like, well, I don't know. Guys, I don't think Zubac was doing anything there. I don't think it was because of his 3 points and like not doing anything defensively. But, you know, I think that was part of it. But the number one reason, we all know the answer to this, Jamal Murray has been on the cusp of becoming a star. And I think that not only has he broken through that sort of ceiling, but he's now peaked his head inside the superstar realm. Like, I don't think he's there, but he has 2 50-point games in the playoffs. Well, how many players can say that? He's got another 2 40-point games in the playoffs. How many players can say they have 4 40-plus point games in a playoff series? So he is, I think, clearly now a star player. I think everybody's kind of elevated what he's capable of, you know, from these 14 games in the playoffs so far. And there's moments where if you are the Lakers, I think you feel good about your defensive Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Alex Caruso, very good defender. Danny Green, that's bodies you can throw at him. Are they better than Paul George? Defensively, I mean. Are they better than Kawhi Leonard defensively? Are they better than Patrick Beverley? Well, maybe, but still, the Clippers, too, had bodies, and Jamal Murray, too, was able to sort of score on them. So if you ask me, Denver had one superstar. They now have a second guy who peeks his head into that room every now and then and says, hey, I'm a superstar tonight as well.
That's a good way. I love thinking about it from that way. That there's like a bouncer there,
yeah,
whose job it is to like keep the superstars like away from the stars. And every so often, like a star will, you know, they'll get a Taco Tuesday inside the superstar room.
I love that. Say, hey, man, I got a free access into the VIP section here. Yeah.
Excuse me. I'm gonna go 8 of 12 from 3-point range tonight. Is it okay if I just have my drinks in here? Is that okay? I love that. All right. I think what it comes down to in this series is basically are the teams that that Denver has played, like which team has played more flawed teams? Because I think that's
that's easily the Lakers.
Well, easily. I don't know though. I think so. But Utah.
People are wrong about this, man. Utah made the trade around Christmas, and from that point on, they were the number one offense in the NBA. They were very good. They got incredible performances. It's not like Houston we knew was a flawed team. They also got horrible performances from their guys, so they played the worst version of themselves. You don't have to think that the Utah Jazz are a great team. I think they were better than people thought. Like they're a very good offensive team. Mm-hmm. They also got incredible performances from their key guys, like playing well above their level. So you look at that one, say that. The Clippers, I know everybody's ragging on them, and rightfully so. They really did choke down the stretch in Game 7. Are we now pretending Kawhi Leonard's not a good player? Are we now pretending Paul George isn't a good player, that Lou Williams and these guys aren't good? No. Did they choke? Did Denver outplay him? Yes. So Denver, to me, I think probably played the two toughest teams if you just looked at the four teams that were played in this playoffs.
What I mean, I don't mean tough. I mean flawed. Like, I mean like which team's fatal flaw was something that the Lakers or the Nuggets were most able to take advantage of? And I think that there's arguments to both sides of this. Like the way that the Clippers, like you talked about, so you mentioned the individual defenders.
Well, you can't possibly believe this. I'm fascinated though.
Well, all right. But what I'm saying though is that, like, so you mentioned how the Clippers have better individual defenders that they could have thrown at Jamal Murray. And I agree with you.
They did throw at him. Yeah.
Yeah. And I agree with you. But defense is a team thing. Defense is a team-wide commitment. And if you aren't 100% invested in that commitment, you're going to see people fall off a cliff defensively. Well, and I think in that regard, like the Clippers' fatal flaw was that they couldn't effing stand each other.
Well, you know? Sure, of course. There's no question about it. And I think obviously now in hindsight that's true. But the problem there I think was more about they didn't have the personnel to match up with Denver's best player. And on top of that, when you talk about the backside rotations that were required for them to beat, specifically Jokic, a guy that's just designed to make you scramble. Sure, but that's not a fatal flaw to me. That's more of like, okay, the matchup had some things that lend itself to an advantage, but let's not forget Kawhi Leonard was scoring very well until the fourth quarter of Game 7. Like he actually was very good in the series. Not great. He wasn't great enough to get the series, you know, the door closed, but it wasn't like he was bad. Paul George had some brilliant moments in the series. So contrast that, for example, let's go over to Portland, who...
Well, that's the thing, is that like these teams, the teams the Lakers played were probably more flawed.
There's no question about it. Yeah, they were completely flawed. At one point, they didn't even have Damian Lillard for, was it two games that he missed basically to close out that series?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But
by that time, the series was
over. It was over, but nonetheless, they didn't have to have that like, oh, they scrappy team won Game 5 to now force us back onto the court or whatever. They didn't have any threat of that. Mm-hmm. Hey, Houston Rockets team, you don't have to guard Russell Westbrook. I mean, he's quickly gone from the MVP of the league to a guy that I don't know what a solution is for Russell Westbrook going forward. And I this sounds a little hot takey. Can you picture him winning a playoff series on it? What does that team look like?
Well, one thing
I'm being serious about this.
I have to think somebody as talented as Russell Westbrook at some point learns how to shoot a 3-pointer.
Oh, no. Are you kidding?
To me, when I watch Russell, this is a tangent, but when I watch Russell Westbrook shoot his 3-pointers in warmups, they're set shots. But then when he shoots them in the game, he elevates like 36 inches off the floor, and you can't make a 3-pointer that way. consistently.
I hope he winds up on the Lakers with the promise that he's going to develop a three-point shot.
I mean, I'm saying if he doesn't, you're right. There is no way to win
he was really, really bad. I mean,
either he does that or he's unplayable.
Yeah.
And that's basically what he has to realize, which, you know, for as much as we love Russell Westbrook for his various, you know, his F you attitude towards, you know, F the world kind of attitude, this is something where he's going to have to humble himself and say, all right, in this case, the world F'd me.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick second here, and when we come back,
also forget that James Harden has turned into a pumpkin every single time he has ever had an opportunity to in a big game. So
it's so predictable at this point that I didn't feel the need to bring it up.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick second here. When we come back, we are going to try these power rankings that, as Adam would like to make just crystal clear, were my idea. All right, so I'll let you explain kind of your rationale in making some of these decisions and putting together this this list.
Well, number one, I had to.
I came up with both the ideas for the directions that we could have taken this segment, sir.
The question is, who has the most to gain? Which is a different question from who has the most to lose. And I want to explain this because I think LeBron James always has the most to lose until he retires, because he's in the conversation for the greatest player ever. And three championships, while impressive, not many people have it. It does feel almost a little weird that he doesn't have more. And so here's an opportunity to add to that collection and this, mm-hmm. that. But more to gain? That just feels a little bit different to me, because there are some players that, if they should win a champion, or people, it's not just players, but that should they win a championship, they gain an enormous amount. They go from not on the map to like up in the center of the map. So I just wanted to make that caveat.
All right, let's start. So you said you put together two for each team?
Yeah, it just worked out that way a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I have a total of eight people.
All right, let's start with number eight.
Anthony Davis. I think of all of the key players.
Lower than I thought. That's interesting.
Higher or lower? No, of all the key players, I think he has the least to gain. And here's why. He could be the finals MVP and the Lakers win. And I still think people are going to credit LeBron James for it. As they should. I mean, LeBron, Anthony Davis has been spectacular in these playoffs. I still feel that everybody realizes LeBron is the engine. He's the guy. He's, you know, and I think that with Anthony Davis, there's almost certainly going to be a little bit of the KD effect, where it's like, okay, yeah, you won, but it was you had LeBron. It was the two of you at best. And really it was LeBron and you. And I just think he's going to get that treatment. And also because it's not like his career resume to that point was exactly loud. All of these upsets and big time performances. So I think you go from that to all of a sudden winning a championship the moment you team up with LeBron. LeBron gets the credit for that.
So to continue with your car analogy, with LeBron being the engine, right?
Yeah.
Like KD was the nitrous.
Right? It kind of was.
KD was like a turbo button that was just, it was over. As soon as he turned it on.
KD was a contender every year, like almost every year for the five previous to arriving in there. Nobody really ever questioned.
KD was also surrounded by Russell Westbrook and Serge Ibaka.
You were about to say James Harden and Russell Westbrook, the two guys we just killed for not being anything.
That was earlier in their careers.
It was a different
NBA. It's a much better organization that he was playing for. Like the OKC Thunder weren't owned by somebody who didn't have a training staff devoted simply to the team. Like that was headline news when Gail Benson gave the Pelicans their own training staff.
What I'm saying is that Kevin Durant, you're right that he went to a team that was even better and even more of a can't miss opportunity than what this mm-hmm. Lakers team is. But he also at least had so many big time performances on big stages that it was like, okay, we always knew Kevin Durant, or we assumed he could win a championship mm-hmm. as the best player. Anthony Davis wins one. Even if he wins the finals MVP, I just don't know that people are going to say, oh yes, Anthony Davis can be the best player. It'll be like, Okay, yes, but if LeBron James is the second best player on your team, you can win it. That, and that's, again, this is a narrative. I'm not saying it's necessarily fair, it's and fine. A lot of things can happen, but to me, he has the least to gain of all the big-name players left.
Yeah, we're... I don't want to harp on this too long, but also, like, KD joined a team that was ready built, right? That was a core that was together. That was an organization that was already ready to go. That team had just won 73 games. The Lakers were nothing last year. Like, the Lakers didn't make the playoffs last year with LeBron James. That's how low the organization was before they traded for Anthony Davis. And so, like, I actually agree with you. I do. I agree with you that like, Anthony Davis is going to get less credit than LeBron James will, in part because, by the way, LeBron helped make it so that the Lakers could trade for Anthony Davis in the first place, right? Let me
put it this way, though, for you. This will really set it home, I think. Is Anthony Davis a top, seven player at worst? I mean, I don't need you to, like, tell me exactly. Just what's the say? He's a top 10 player, right? He's a top 10 player.
I consider him top five. But
top five player. Okay.
Yeah.
If they win a championship, is he higher than top five? I mean, I just don't think so.
Right. Well, I
who's he past? Kevin Durant?
I don't necessarily disagree with you on putting him this far down the list. I just
let me go to my next one. So that was number eight. So number seven, for example, and this is where the contrast is Jamal Murray. Because I didn't think Jamal Murray was a top 35 player coming into this season. If he wins a championship this year, even as the second best player on the team, I mean, he wasn't in the club. He wasn't in the conversation. He was outside on the deck. That's the furthest he can get in.
He was in line. He was in line for the ticket.
He was in line with a fake ID. He was trying to pretend he knew somebody's cousin. Like, if he gets all the way in, if they win a championship and with as spectacularly as he's played, I mean, does he make the All-Star game next year, no matter what happens, just on a, hey guys, this guy went to the finals and won. I mean, so he has an enormous amount to gain.
My question with Jamal is that, like, is he playing with too much house money right now to gain that much more?
Well, I mean, if they win a championship, of course. Yeah. I mean, of course, a championship? Again, it's unlikely. I think part of it's hard for us to wrap our head around this because the Nuggets are the least likely, I think, to win a championship right now. But if they do, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That duo, you start talking about the Jokic-Murray duo. Is it the best duo in the NBA? I mean, if they get it done, that means they went
through. What a world.
That would have meant that they went through Donovan Mitchell and Gobert. Like, okay, we could see it. They went through Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, a shocker. They went through LeBron James and Anthony Davis. Okay, they beat that one. And then whoever comes out of the East. Jamal Murray has a lot to gain, and that's in part in virtue of where he's starting from, I think, of the lowest of all the people on my list.
Mm-hmm. All right, who's next?
Eric Spoelstra.
I would have had him higher.
This is why this list wouldn't. I said that it's kind of silly because all of these guys could make.
Yeah, I would agree that it's a great idea because it drives conversation.
Conversation, exactly. Yeah, we could make arguments all around here. No, Spoelstra. I think everybody knew he was a great coach and has known that for a long time. And as time has gone by, it's grown and grown. But I mean, you get a Miami Heat versus Lakers matchup, and now it's LeBron, the guy who got all of the credit for the Heatles championship versus Spoelstra, the guy who probably didn't get nearly enough of his fair share of those going head to head. And if he wins, especially if it happens against LeBron James, I don't know. Whenever you ask people about the greatest coaches in the NBA, it's okay. We got Nick Nurse, we got Brad Stevens, and then Spoelstra, maybe Carly. And then and he's kind of at the top of the and then. Spoelstra gets to do this? I mean, this would be an impressive road for a very good team that came together in short order.
Especially given the fact that, like, his zone is what is dismantling the Celtics. Like, it's very rare that you can actually point to something something strategically that a coach is doing that changes the series or changes a matchup. In this case, you can legitimately do that.
Yeah. And also we just looked at the Clippers, and not that anybody's cutting the Clippers any slack whatsoever, because nobody is, nor should they. But the one thing you can say that you could maybe squint and be like, okay, they have a point, is that it's hard to come together in one season to that degree. What are the Heat doing? Didn't we just add Jimmy Butler? Didn't we just add some pieces around the periphery that are now major pieces of this team? So Eric Spoelstra, He already has, I think, gained maybe as much as anybody on this list, but outside of Jamal Murray. I mean, Jamal Murray has entered, I think, the people look at him, or he's already gone up a lot, but Spoelstra too. Next on my list, Jason Tatum. This one's interesting. He's a little bit of a already hyped player, you know, like people already kind of see him as an up and coming. Maybe that he could take cap. If the Boston Celtics, he's the best player on that team. If they win a championship, look, maybe he's terrible and they win one because somebody else steps up. That's a possibility. But I would assume if they won one, it was in large part because of Jason Tatum. And if there's only a few people we know for a fact can be the best player on a championship team that are still playing: LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant. I don't know. Is there another player currently in the NBA that we know can be the best player on a championship team?
No, no, not really. And
so if Jason Tatum gets to enter that list and say, hey, we know I can because I did it, that's that's kind of crazy.
Well, and it also helps that like his second best player is not like is not also a star. Like he doesn't have a star. He doesn't have another
Kemba and Smart.
He doesn't have James another superstar Brown. Like he did. Yeah. Like even Murray has Jokic, right?
Yeah.
Butler has Bam, who has kind of lifted himself into that kind of conversation. Obviously, LeBron and AD.
Yeah.
The fact that Tatum's second best player is, I don't want to say Kemba because he's been such a liability. I don't know.
It's all those guys. It's all of them. Yeah. I mean, that's a real team effort. But
that's my point.
Tatum has clearly been the guy that they kind of count on, you know, to create one-on-one offense. So he's up there. But ahead of him, he's not the number one Celtic because up ahead of him is the golden boy, Brad Stevens, who I hate to say it, the point you're making right now is about Boston being a team without stars, right? Tatum is sort of the forced one. Well, who gets credit when a team wins without stars? The coach, of course. And the coach that everybody already wants to sort of anoint as the next – you know, the Belichick of the NBA, the wonder kid, the guy, what was it? Chris Mannix once asked, like, would you trade the number one pick for Brad Stevens?
It's that tweet by itself that like, I would be rooting against the Celtics anyway, but that tweet is insulting. The fact that anybody would ever ask, would you rather have a coach or a superstar player is ridiculous. It's patently absurd. And yet I kind of agree with you. I would probably have him and Tatum lower on my list. I think Spoelstra has more to gain.
But we're talking about Tatum doesn't belong in the conversation of LeBron James and this and that. But if he wins a championship, he gets vaulted up. So it's less about what I think will happen or this. Again, this isn't even what I think deserves to happen. It's just if you're the best player on a championship team, you start getting talked about as a top 10 guy, maybe top 5 guy, or – you know, next time he goes up against James Harden, people say, well, I'd rather have Tatum than Harden because Tatum can get it done. And
I think I saw that already. I think that already started.
Imagine if they win a championship, how many players he's going to pass on that conversation while averaging 22 points a game. All right, so number three to me, and this is, again, most to lose, it's LeBron James. Most to gain, he comes up third on my list of most to gain. Probably not fair. He always has the most to gain, but I wanted this list to be more interesting.
So I put it third. Adam Bayless over here. Here's the thing with what LeBron has to gain, and you I'll let you make the point because you made the point before we got going. But when you compare him to the kinds of great players, like the greatest players in the history
Michael
of the
Jordan,
Lakers,
Magic John, of the Lakers only
in the history of the Lakers, right? Like he's probably better than he's better than all of the best Lakers that have. Like the only player you could make in the only players that you could make an argument were like more dominant during their time were Shaq and Wilt, right? Than LeBron has been. But other than that, though, like in terms of just out and out greatness over the course of their career, it's LeBron and it's not particularly close.
I love that you talk about the most dominant just Lakers of all time, and LeBron might be third, and that list doesn't even include Magic Johnson or Kobe Bryant.
It's insane.
There's a lot of great Lakers players.
It's like whenever they do like the, you know, put together your best, you know, five-man lineup out of all times, it's like, come on, let's exclude the Lakers from that. But anywho. I think the point that you were kind of making was that like LeBron is seen as the better player than those guys, but has, you know, fewer championships by more than one.
Yeah.
And closing that gap with that same organization, I think would mean a lot.
It definitely would. It feels almost more like more to lose than more to gain. And part of this is just because my personal opinion is I think the Lakers are pretty heavy title favorites right now. So again, there's a lot more to lose when it's almost expected of you that you win this championship than the other way around is all the way we get to the top of these lists. Number two for me is Jimmy Butler. And in a lot of ways, he's already sort of, he's another guy who's sort of risen up. You talk about that. Okay, Jimmy Butler, is he a top 10 player? Maybe fringe this or that. Well, now going into next season, I think people are going to be like, what? I'd way rather have him than, say, a Giannis maybe. So Jimmy Butler, if he wins a championship and becomes a guy you know can be the best player and he continues to win and the Miami Heat continue to win in the exact fashion that they have, what do you have tonight, 14 points? 20. That was the most dominant 14-point performance you can possibly have. All right. I guess Jokic had a pretty dominant 16-point performance in Game 6. But nonetheless, that was him being just the guy. Mm-hmm. If he does that and wins a championship, the story changes on him so much.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It is. Here's what I'll say about Butler, and I think this is where he winds up being the winner of these playoffs no matter what. But we are in this kind of era of the millennial NBA player, right? And
I don't know. Let's see what you mean by that.
Well, so when Butler left Minnesota, he had no problem whatsoever calling Kat soft calling Wiggins soft and saying that, like, you guys aren't working hard enough. And it, same thing with the youth that he was surrounded by in Philly, that Embiid is out of shape. And
primarily Simmons, it sounds like, yeah.
Yeah, and Simmons has his – cavalcade of issues
critiqued.
Too.
Can't be critiqued, I think, was the thing he said. Yeah, too right. Sensitive to critique, yeah.
And Butler's approach to this is so old school. It's so, no, man, I'm gonna work my ass off. I'm going to get myself in the weight room. I'm going to work my ass off. I'm going to be in better shape than whoever I go up against. Can I shoot better than those guys? No. Am I the best athlete on every single court that I step on? No. But I'm going to have this like hard-nosed attitude, and I'm going to surround myself or I'm going to be surrounded by a whole bunch of guys who have that similar hard-nosed attitude. And this era of the way that like PR teams protect superstars and don't force them to answer all of their questions. No, Jimmy Butler is going to be right there front and center to be the best player on his team and lead as such. And I don't think you can say that about very many stars. They all probably happen to be active right now. Mm. Is those kind of stars that I am going to lead, not just by example, but also there's value in saying no. Like there's that one quote, right, where he's on the sideline. He's like, "We have some MFers on this team. We have some real MFers on this team." And I think there's immense value in that, and the fact that he didn't respect either of the previous young cores that he played with, and now gets to show, if you actually do things my way, this is how you win in the NBA. I think that like he's a major winner for being able to say that.
I think a lot of people when he left Philly thought, well, what are you doing? You could have won a championship. If you stayed in Philly, you could have won one. And I think his reply was, no, I couldn't have. Yeah. I'm going over here. This is where I can win. Well, these guys are tough. And the culture and everything. I mean, it's all of it. It's the culture that you build in there. And Philly clearly screwed up those ingredients somewhere along the way.
Well, I mean, you look at the organization that he went to play with. He pairs himself with Pat Riley, who was the like hard-nosed guy. Yeah. We are going to condition harder than everybody. And if you're going to play with the Miami Heat, you're expected to play defense and you're expected to do all these things. And you compare that to some of the current GMs, younger GMs, who have to kowtow to their superstars and feel the need to say to Anthony Davis, like, okay, fine, you don't have to play the five all the time. Like, no, that doesn't really play in Miami. And I think the fact that Butler went and found an executive who thinks the same way that he does and has the ability to leverage the power that he wields over that organization to get everybody to buy in that way. I find that to be one of the cooler stories in all of this. And I kind of wonder if throughout the league, some superstars are going to look at that and say, huh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Well, that means there's one more space here.
There's one more spot.
Is there anybody I forgot to mention, Anthony?
I said, so they always
was this
say
the
with
most
like,
predictable number one?
They always say that like people who own a dog for a really long time like start to look, I swear to God, you're even starting to look like Jokic. It's the weirdest thing.
starting to give the same face. It's Nikola Jokic. He's got the most to gain. All right, let me ask you something. Coming into the season, whose league was it? I would argue it was Kawhi Leonard's league. Now, why is that? He just won a championship. He's coming off the top, whatever. Okay, you say that. Well, Jokic just went through Kawhi Leonard, outplayed him in a series. But then you could go back and say, okay, well, it wasn't really Kawhi. The Raptors were clearly very good without him. He couldn't step up and make a single shot in the fourth quarter of an elimination game. Like, okay, it was never
not
his
even
league.
A free throw.
And we all now can see it was fraudulent. Kawhi was fraudulently the king, and now he's been there. LeBron James is the true king of the NBA, and it will be until somebody knocks him off. Well, the Nuggets win a championship. That means they knocked off the Los Angeles Lakers and him. And by the way, Jokic has taken the crown of best center in the NBA. It, like, for a long time, it was who was it? But Anthony Davis, I think, still has the best big in the NBA. Now, he gets the center title for all NBA because he gets this for whatever. But Anthony Davis, I think you can – there's the argument to be made that he's a better big, right? And a lot of people do. I think it's a lot of people kind of go back and forth on that. So if he dethrones the fraudulent king, the true king, and the best big in the NBA en route to a championship. And, oh, by the way, a few weeks ago we were burying the big. It doesn't matter. This is a point guards league. This is a wings league. This is a perimeter league. This is an outside-in league. If you flip that all on its head and win as a center, as a playmaking center in the year 2020, are you kidding me? It's Jokic's league. If the Nuggets win a championship, prepare yourselves, the world. Jokic wins a championship. This is Jokic's league.
What's funny about that, what I find like just uproariously funny, is that Jokic couldn't care less.
Definitely not.
About the league being his. Oh, it's my league now? All right, I guess that's cool.
And he's still going to average 11 points per game in November or the first month of the season before he just decides to start trying again.
Not that I disagree with Jokic's placement here, but I think an honorable mention, like 1A is Jokic, and then 1B isn't, you haven't mentioned, but like the city of Denver, I think, is a huge winner if they win a championship. Like, not they will. How many national TV games do they play, like, off the top of your head this year?
You think they get a bunch if they win a championship? I mean, I don't
they
know.
They have
man.
To. They're the champs, dude. Every game they play against the Lakers. Look,
they would
is
be like the Toronto Raptors.
Televised.
They'd be like the Toronto Raptors, man. I mean, you're right. They would get a lot, but they still would be like third in the West or fourth in the West. I mean, it'd still be the Lakers. It'd still be Golden State. Denver would get to be out there from time
but
to time.
Where the do Clippers. They rank now?
They're probably right there. I mean, they're probably right there. I mean, it's late.
It's,
I mean, Lakers swallow
like
up all the West
gap.
The Lakers is just everything. So, and that wouldn't change. The Lakers sell. Even if the Nuggets win, people are still going to tune in to watch the Lakers play the Washington Wizards rather than the Nuggets play, say, the Utah Jazz in a repeat of what was a fantastic.
This is where I'm usually
the numbers
cynical.
Bear it out.
Yeah. No, I know. I'm usually cynical, but I would hope that at some point the NBA realizes as ratings diminish, like,
you got to start showing the interesting.
You got to start getting players. People to care about these other teams. Right, like, I will tune. People tuned in tonight to watch Browns freaking Bengals. Those two absolute jokes of an organization for the entirety of your and my lifetimes. And the reason they do that is because they're given that stage in the first place.
Right.
Whereas like the NBA, like, no, if it's not the Lakers, then no matter how great the matchup might be, we'd rather go with the Lakers. We'd rather go with the Clippers, no matter what kind of a beatdown that we might line ourselves up for in that game.
So if we had most, the NBA would be most to lose. Then I would, if we were doing most to lose, not most to gain, NBA. Because if they get their Miami Denver finals and Denver wins, I think the NBA goes, oh God, we should have never come to this place. We should have just awarded the Bucks the de facto title, and everybody would just celebrate it. And like, all right,
they recreate the GIF of Bugs Bunny sawing off Florida. Right, it's Adam Silver sawing off Florida.
Exactly. Jokic, it's his league. He gets through 8 more wins. This is Jokic. Face it, you would love an era where Jokic was the guy everyone was chasing. I mean, let's.
In part because Jokic wants no part of any kind of a race. Like, we're chasing you, Jokic. You can catch me. That's fine. I'll just go ahead and win 16 games at the end of the season, too. All right, this was a blast. We still have one more podcast, Adam and I do, previewing Lakers Nuggets. We've already previewed it from the Lakers standpoint. We've done it now from a more neutral standpoint. And now we're going to look at it from on Locked On Nuggets from a Nuggets perspective. So make sure you guys tune into all three of those shows for everything that you could possibly ask for in terms of this series. It's a fascinating weekend ahead of us. We have... Did you find yourself sad that we only, like, there are some nights there aren't games, and then there's, you know, there are no more nights with only one game?
Completely 100 with you, man. The nights that there's nothing is great right now. It's a breath of fresh air.
I find myself, like, looking for things to do, and Jen is like, there's not an NBA game? Like, we have to talk? So, all right. Have a great rest of your weekend, everybody. Adam and I will be back to talk to you guys on Friday when the Lakers are up 3-1, and I am just terrified about how that series might play out next. Please be safe out there, and we will talk to you a week from now.